All right, let's start. Second day, they'll be here for a few minutes. They'll make an appearance when it's shofar blowing, yeah. Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for joining us as we're traveling on our journey through Elul, getting ready for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So we've gathered tonight for some inspiration. The theme of this evening is based on a pasuk that we say before the shofar is blown on Rosh Hashanah. Min ha-metzar karasi ka anani ba-merchav ka, which means I call out to Hashem from a constraint, a point of narrowness, and Hashem answers me from a place of width, a place of space and bigness, I guess. Expansiveness, that's the word. So we have invited four inspiring women to come and share their personal thoughts and reflections on that topic. I'll introduce them all now, and then you can just come up when it's your turn. So if it's okay with all of you, we'll start with Stacey Kahanovitz, and then we will hear from Terry Bernstein, then we'll have my distinguished mother-in-law, Rebetzin Garari, and then we'll end off with Liav Benstock. So we'll start with Stacey. Come on up. Thank you. Okay. Hello, everyone. Good evening. So nice to be here. So as Chaya has just said, there is a phrase we say just before we hear the shofar. Min ha-metzar karati ka, anani b'merchav ka. It is a beautiful pasuk. From the narrow place I called to Hashem, he answered me from a place of expansiveness. But I think that this beautiful pasuk is much more powerful when we understand the actual meaning of what min ha-metzar really means. The word metzar comes from the idea of being in a narrow, confined, constricted place, a place where you feel stuck, a place where you feel that you can't see any way forward, a place where you don't necessarily feel Hashem. And I think that that is exactly why we hear this, we say this pasuk before we hear the shofar. Because the shofar is not just a beautiful sound, it is a cry. It is the sound of a person calling out from somewhere deep inside and saying, Hashem, I need you, I am here, please hear me. And perhaps this is one of the deepest messages of Rosh Hashanah. Sometimes we only discover how much we need Hashem when we are in the Meitzah. When life is comfortable, when everything is working, it can be easy to say, of course, Hashem is here. But when things don't make sense, when the plan doesn't look anything like we had imagined, when we feel lost, disappointed, heartbroken, or completely alone, that is when the question actually becomes real. Can I still find Hashem here? And for me, the question became very real. There was a period in my life when I was going through a terrible breakup. At the same time, I was trying to become religious in Sydney. And honestly, it was one of the most difficult experiences. I was trying to figure out my relationship, what my relationship with Hashem is actually supposed to look like. Can I use my phone on Shabbat? Should I use my phone on Shabbat? Should I not use my phone on Shabbat? Should I drive to shul? Should I walk to shul? Should I eat kosher? Should I not eat kosher? There were so many questions that were going through my head that I was like, what if I do something that's right or wrong? What is my relationship with Hashem actually going to be like? So I had to ask a few questions. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to live? What does it really mean to have Hashem in my life? And underneath all of those practical questions was something a lot deeper. Where is Hashem? Because honestly, at that point, I really did not feel him. Maybe he is more present. Maybe the dip... Sorry. Whoopsies. he did it back to front. That's right. I felt like I was trying. I thought I was putting in the effort. I thought I was doing everything I could. But looking back now, I see that I was putting in the effort, but I wasn't necessarily putting in the hard work of building a relationship with Hashem. There is a difference. Sometimes we think that if we do more mitzvahs, more learning, more rules, more changes, then automatically we are going to feel closer to Hashem. But a relationship doesn't work like that. You can do everything right, but still not open your heart. And I think that was the part of my Meitzah. I was searching for Hashem. But I was also searching for certainty. I wanted to know that I was on the right path. I wanted to know that everything would work out. I wanted to know that if I did the right things, Hashem would actually give me the right outcome. But that's not always what bitachon is. And I learned that in a very profound way through my Rebbetzin in South Africa, Esty Stern. She taught me she'ar bitachon, and she completely changed my perspective on what it means to have a beautiful, healthy relationship with Hashem. She explained something that has stayed with me ever since. Emunah is constant, but bitachon can feel like a complete and utter roller coaster. There are times that when everything is going up, you feel close to Hashem. You feel inspired. You feel like you understand. You feel like everything is falling into place. And then suddenly, the roller coaster drops. Something happens that you actually didn't expect. Something hurts. Something doesn't make sense. And when the roller coaster dips, that's when we actually have a choice. Most of us can usually think that Hashem has actually left me. He is not with me. Or we can say, that's exactly where I need to dig deeper, because maybe Hashem isn't less present in this dip. Maybe he is more present. Maybe the dip is where the relationship becomes real. And I've come to understand that in a very personal way. On December 11th, my grandfather passed away. My grandfather was one of the closest people to me. He was one of my biggest supporters, my biggest fans, and someone who I loved. And believe me, in that way, I felt so incredibly connected to him. His loss has been incredibly challenging for me. And yet, the same weekend, I went to my stepsister's wedding. So there I was, carrying one of the deepest losses of my life while also being present for one of the happiest moments in her life. And I was navigating all of that while being a mom of two boys and having a three-week-old. It was incredibly strange and an emotional weekend. There was grief, there was joy, there was tears, there was dancing, there was exhaustion, there was love, there was loss. And somehow, all of those feelings could exist at the exact same time. What that weekend taught me is that we don't always have to choose one emotion. We can hold two seemingly completely contradictory feelings at once. We can be heartbroken and grateful. We can be grieving and celebrating. We can be struggling and still experience moments of incredible joy. We can be in a meitzah and still experience a merchav. Rav Daron Peres speaks about this idea very, very often, that life isn't always about replacing one emotion with another. Sometimes we just have to learn how to hold the juxtaposition to make space for both. And I think that is also part of bitachon. Bitachon doesn't necessarily mean that when something painful happens, we suddenly should become okay with it. It doesn't mean that faith removes grief. It doesn't mean that because we believe in Hashem, that we don't feel devastated when we lose someone that we love. Sometimes bitachon means being able to say, I'm deeply hurting and I still believe that Hashem is here. I don't understand this and I still believe that Hashem is with me. I am sad, but I can still dance at a wedding. I can miss someone, but I still be grateful for the people that I have in my life. Both things can be true. And perhaps that is what the Meitzah is really teaching us. The narrow place doesn't always disappear immediately. Sometimes we learn how to create a little more space inside the narrowness. And we learn that our hearts are capable of holding more than one thing. We can hold pain and hope, uncertainty and faith. We can hold sadness and joy. And maybe that is the beginning of Merchav. Because Merchav doesn't always mean that circumstances around us have changed. Sometimes the expansiveness is actually happening inside of us. Our ability to hold, our ability to trust, our ability to continue, our ability to say, Hashem, I don't understand what you are doing, but I know I don't have to walk through this alone. And that brings me to Min Hametzah Karatika. From the narrow place, I call to Hashem, not from the place where everything was perfect, not from the place that I had all the answers, from the narrow place. And Hashem answered me, b'merchav, from expansiveness. Looking back, I see that some of the biggest moments of my life begin in places where I felt the most constricted. Eventually, I met my husband in South Africa, and that meeting changed my life. And what I didn't realize at the time was that Hashem, I don't know why I'm so emotional, wasn't simply sending me a person. He was giving me a partner for the journey, a partner to grow with, a partner to struggle with, a partner to learn with, a partner to search for Hashem with. And that has ultimately been one of the greatest gifts Hashem has given both of us. Because I used to think that finding Hashem meant reaching a point where you finally feel him all the time. where you are certain, where everything makes sense, where you are no longer in a feeling of struggle. But I don't think that's what it means. I think finding Hashem means learning to look for Him inside the struggle, to know where the roller coaster goes down. Hashem hasn't disappeared. He is still there. Maybe that is actually when He is giving us the greatest opportunity to find Him. And when I look at our family today, I realize the journey itself has been the biggest gift. Not just the destination, not just getting married, not just building a family, but everything we went through to get here. The questions, the uncertainty, the difficult moments, the times when I wondered, where was Hashem? Because those moments forced me to search. And when you search for someone, you begin to build a relationship with them. That's what Bitachon became for me. It stopped being about believing what Hashem would give me exactly what I wanted. It became believing that whatever Hashem gives me, I won't go through it alone. And maybe that is what we are being asked to remember when we hear the shofar. The shofar doesn't speak in words. It doesn't give us an explanation. It doesn't tell us what the coming year is going to look like. It simply cries. And somehow that cry reaches a place deeper than words. It reminds us that we don't have to have everything figured out when we turn to Hashem. We can come exactly as we are, from our meitzah, from our narrow place, from the places that in our lives that are still painful, from the questions we will never have answers to, from the things that we are still struggling. We can say, Min ha-meitzah karatika. Hashem, I'm calling you from here, from this place, from this uncertainty. Please be with me. And then comes the second half. Anani ba merchavka. He answered me from a place of expansiveness. Maybe the merchav isn't necessarily that Hashem suddenly removes Himself from every difficult situation. Maybe the merchav is what happens inside of us. Our perspective becomes wider. Our trust becomes deeper. Our relationship with Hashem becomes more real. We realize that the narrow place was not evidence that Hashem wasn't with us. It was actually a place where we were being invited to discover where He was. And perhaps that is the connection to Pesach as well. On Pesach, we tell the story of leaving Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim itself represents Meitzah, a place of limitation, a constriction. Bnei Israel were trapped. They couldn't see a way out, and Hashem took them from the narrowness into freedom. And what happened immediately after they left? They reached the Yam Saf. And suddenly, they were trapped again. The sea was in front of them. Egypt was behind them. They seemed there was no way forward. And maybe that is one of the greatest lessons of the story. Sometimes Hashem takes us out of one meitzah only to bring us to another place where we have to learn to trust Him on an even deeper level. The miracle wasn't just that the sea split. The miracle was that they had to walk forward before they could actually see the path. And I think that is so much about life. We want Hashem to show us the entire road before we actually take our first step. But sometimes Hashem says, take the step, trust me. And only afterwards we understand. To be honest, we will actually never understand. However, when I look back at my journey, I can see so many moments where I actually could not see the road. I didn't know what was coming. I didn't know where I was going. I certainly didn't know that one day I would be standing here with all of you living the life that I do now. But Hashem knew. And perhaps that is what Bitachon really is. Not knowing the future, but knowing who holds the future. And as we stand here before the shofar, I think about all our mitzarim. Everyone has one. Some are visible, some are invisible. Some are completely hidden to me and to you. Some are struggling with their faith. Some are struggling with inside themselves. Some are asking, Hashem, where are you? And maybe the answer is, I am right here. Call to me from this place. Don't wait until you're out of the meitzah to find Hashem. Find Him inside it. Because maybe the deepest relationship with Hashem isn't built when everything is going perfectly. Maybe it is built when the roller coaster drops, and instead of letting go, we actually hold on tighter. We dig deeper. We say, I don't understand this. I don't know why this is happening, but I know I'm not alone. That is the beautiful journey of why I love the concept of Bitachon. And that is what I hope for myself, for my husband, for our family, for all of us on Rosh Hashanah. That when life feels narrow, we don't mistake narrowness for distance from Hashem. That we remember that Min HaMeitzah Karatika, from the narrow place, I still can call. and that Hashem can take that cry and transform it into merchav, into expansiveness, into connection, into growth, into a deeper relationship with Him. Because sometimes the greatest gifts in our lives don't come from avoiding the difficult journey. They come through it. My journey to Hashem, no, is still not a straight line. It's messy. It's confusing. There are moments where I still feel very far away. But today, I look back and say, Hashem was with me the entire time. I didn't just know how to see Him, and perhaps that is the message of the shofar. Not that we have finally arrived, but that we are calling out. We are searching. We are turning towards Hashem again, and maybe that is enough to begin. Min hametza karatika. From my narrow place, I will continue to call Hashem. And I pray this year we should all merit to experience the second half. Anani b'merchav ka. That Hashem should answer each one of us with merchav, with clarity, with strength, with love, with connection, and with the ability to see that even the moments that we thought He wasn't there, He was guiding us all along. Shana Tova.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you all for coming. I felt very honored when Rabbi Levy asked me if I would share my journey and the personal challenge I have faced. Although I don't love public speaking, I felt that this was an opportunity for personal growth, especially during the month of Elul, a special time for reflection, preparation, and growth. My journey began when I went for my regular mammogram. I thought nothing more of it when I walked out of the breast screen doors. 5 days later, I received a phone call asking me to return for an ultrasound because there was something inconclusive in the results. I was fitted in a few days later, and a kind radiographer explained that the ultrasound had picked up something that needed a biopsy. They told me the results would be ready in a week. That day turned out to be the second day of Rosh Hashanah, the 4th of October, 2024. At first, I thought I would ask if I could rather come the following week. But my darling husband, Alon, said he felt I should get the results as soon as possible. And as it was only about 40 minutes walk from our home to the hospital, we decided we'd walk there early and then walk straight to shul. Sitting in that waiting room, I was concerned, but still hoping to hear good news. A nurse called me in, and the surgeon began by asking if there was any breast cancer in my family. I gulped. I looked at Alon as if to say, here comes the bad news. The doctor proceeded to tell me that they had found a 2-centimeter malignant tumor. It was called HER2 positive breast cancer, which is quite aggressive, and I would need chemotherapy followed by surgery and radiation. I would also need targeted therapy injections every 3 weeks for a year. My heart started racing. My hands felt clammy. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I remember Alon reaching over to hold my hand. I asked the doctor whether chemo meant taking a few tablets or whether it was going to be an IV drip like in the movies. She laughed and told me I would need 12 weeks of IV chemo to shrink the tumor, hopefully allowing me to have a lumpectomy rather than a mastectomy. She explained that 1 in 7 women are diagnosed with breast cancer and that there was a very high success rate. I remember saying, good, because I really want to see grandchildren one day. That was when I became emotional. The doctor handed me the box of tissues, looked at me very firmly and said, and you will. We left feeling completely overwhelmed, filled with doubt and uncertainty. As we walked to shul, we talked through everything the doctor had said. And in the days and months that followed, we went over that conversation many times. But there was one thing I kept saying. How lucky am I that the mammogram picked it up? How lucky that we caught it early. When we arrived at shul, we saw our son David on CSG duty. It was actually his birthday that day. I told Alon I didn't want to say anything to him yet because he was focused on his shift. Our son-in-law Gil saw us arriving and came out to ask if everything was okay. It was then that I realized I needed to be strong for my family. I called out my daughter Lori and my mom Bev and told them about the diagnosis. They became emotional, which somehow made me even more determined to hold it together. I reassured them, the doctor says we caught it early, I'm going to be fine. Looking back, how incredible that from the hospital, we walked straight into Shul. Because it was there that the power of prayer, tefillah, and trusting in Hashem's plan, bitachon, would give me the strength, hope, and perspective throughout the year ahead. I'm normally quite a private person. At first, I didn't want to tell too many people. And then I thought differently. The more people who knew, the more people who there would be saying Tehillim and praying for me. And I remembered a beautiful saying, Hashem, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before beginning chemo, I had a PET scan. Baruch Hashem, the cancer could not be found anywhere else in my body. I was also tested for the BRCA gene. Waiting for those results was incredibly stressful because I knew that if I carried the gene, it could affect my children, my sister, my mum. When the doctor eventually phoned me with the results, I was driving to work. I pulled over, shaking like a leaf. She got straight to the point. Good news, you don't have the gene. I burst into tears. I told her, I feel like I've just won the lotto. Then came the chemo. For 12 weeks, every Friday, my family surrounded me with love. Before my first session, my kids presented me with beautifully wrapped little gifts, three crocheted mascots that accompanied me to every session, a positive duck, a positive pickle, and a positive penguin. And before leaving for chemo every week, Alon would present me with a white box containing some small thoughtful gift, a coloring book, a puzzle book, an eye mask, a beautiful hand cream or a fragrant candle. Those little gestures meant so much. I chose Fridays for chemo because I thought I could recover over the weekend and keep working during the week. I wanted to maintain as much normality as possible. I also thought work would be a good distraction. I didn't quite realize what chemo brain was going to do to that plan. As a medical receptionist, I continued working, wearing a mask because my immunity was compromised. After chemo each week, I felt pretty shocking. I would take my cocktail of Panadol, anti-nausea, and anti-diarrhea medication. I would lie awake, shivering in the middle of summer, counting down the hours until I could take my next medication. For those 12 weeks, I couldn't make it to shul on Shabbos morning. Instead, I did my own davening at home. And again, my faith helped me cope, make decisions, and find meaning. My special mum would pop in after shul every week and tell me how awful I looked. And I would try and convince her, don't worry, mum, I look worse than I feel. After about 2 weeks, my hair started falling out. Chunks would come out in my brush. I could put my hand through my hair and it would simply fall away. It was confronting, so I decided to be proactive. My children came with me to the hairdresser and turned what could have been a terribly sad moment into something almost fun. I told the hairdresser, just shave it. The kids cheered while my hair fell to the floor. I had my shaitel ready. I put it on, looked in the mirror, and walked out feeling better than ever. I didn't want to look like a victim. And I thought about the words of Pirkei Avot. Everything is foreseen, yet freedom of choice is given. I couldn't control everything that was happening to me, but I could control how I faced each day. I chose faith over fear, hope over despair, positivity over negativity. My job was to keep moving forward, to do everything I could, and to trust Hashem with the rest. As chemo continued, the side effects became more intense. The fatigue and brain fog increased. I had mouth ulcers, sores in my nose, a sty in my eye, rashes on my hands and feet, and sometimes my nose would simply start bleeding. Yet I remembered something a good friend had said to me. Chemo is your best friend. It's saving your life. I've always been a gym junkie. I loved my combat classes and my weights, but during chemo, even walking became difficult. Towards the end, I could barely walk up and down our road. I would come home from work absolutely exhausted and just collapse on the bed. That was when my special cousins decided it was time to organize a food roster. At first, I resisted. I didn't want to put people out, but Alon and David thought it was imperative. I was absolutely blown away by the kindness. Friends, acquaintances, even people I hardly knew wanted to help. Healthy meals appeared at our door. I will always be grateful to everyone who fed me and my family during that time. One of the lessons I learned was that sometimes accepting help is also a form of strength. I had to stop using my energy trying to prove I could do everything myself and instead use that energy for healing. It was actually ridiculous how spoiled I was by everyone. I received wonderful books, flowers, pot plants, nail vouchers, and even foot massages. It seemed ongoing, and every thoughtful gesture made me feel so loved and so special. At a time when life could have felt very frightening and lonely, I was constantly reminded just how many people cared. Eventually, chemo came to an end. It was time to ring the bell. My family gathered around me. They brought balloons, and my sister and special niece brought cupcakes and chocolates for the nurses. Everyone cheered as I rang the bell loud and clear. I was very happy to say goodbye to that particular best friend. After a few weeks of recovery, it was time for surgery. Baruch Hashem, the chemo had shrunk the tumor enough for me to have a lumpectomy rather than a mastectomy. They also removed some lymph glands. And then came the words we had been praying for. The lymph nodes were clear. It had not spread. I was cancer-free. Next came 15 sessions of radiation, my new best friend. And after that came the Herceptin targeted therapy injections every 3 weeks for the rest of the year, another best friend. 1 year after my treatment began, I rang the bell for the final time. Treatment was finished. A friend once said to me, "This too shall pass." And it did. But as much as I wanted it to pass, I realized that I didn't want to spend an entire year wishing the time away. I wanted to find meaning in each day. When I reflect on my journey, my faith has definitely been a source of resilience, courage, and hope. I've always been a bit of a worrier. My late dad used to tell me, "Don't waste your energy worrying." And my mom still says, if I'm not worrying, I'm worried about why I'm not worrying. But I'm learning not to allow fear to rule my life, not to focus on what could go wrong, but to grab every opportunity to turn something into a positive. Today, I feel I'm living with more intention. Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks spoke beautifully about joy. Joy is not found in worrying about tomorrow. Joy is found in gratefully accepting and celebrating today. We are here, we are alive, we breathe the air Hashem gives us, we live the life He renews in us every single day. We don't know what tomorrow will bring, but we can choose to celebrate today. I now feel a greater need to do more mitzvot, give more tzedakah, and give back to the community. I'm so incredibly grateful to my family and friends who carried me through this journey. I could never, ever have done it alone. I'm grateful to sit at work today with a clear head after experiencing chemo brain. I'm grateful that I've started going back to gym. And every time I walk through those gym doors, I thank Hashem for giving me the energy to be there. I cherish time with my family more than ever. I want to make memories. I want to celebrate life. And even though every morning I still wake up with neuropathy, the pins and needles in my fingers and toes, that remains from chemotherapy. The first thing I do when I put my feet on the floor is say, "Modeh ani," because there really are no better words to express how grateful I am to Hashem for being alive and being given another day. Perhaps that has been my journey from the narrow space into the open place. The narrow space was the fear, uncertainty, treatment, and not knowing what tomorrow would bring. The open place is not necessarily a life without challenges. It's a life where I can see the blessings within those challenges, where I understand that I cannot control everything that happens to me, but I can choose how I respond. I can choose faith, I can choose hope. I can choose gratitude, I can choose life. And during Elul, as we reflect on the year that has passed and prepare ourselves for the year ahead, perhaps that's something we can all take with us, to appreciate today, to tell the people we love that we love them, to accept help when we need it, to help when somebody else needs it, to worry a little less, to pray a little more, and to remember just how precious every ordinary day really is. I would like to wish everyone Shana Tova Umetuka. May we all be inscribed in the Book of Life, a life filled with health, joy, love, meaning, and peace. And may we all have the strength, whatever our challenges may be, to move from our narrow spaces into open places.
Hello. Well, this is not easy to come after those two amazing, oh my gosh. So, so inspiring. Thank you so much. Wow. Wow. Okay. So I'm just going to be plain and ordinary and just, I don't know, we're going to shift. That's it. That's what it is. All right. So the topic, as we've heard so beautifully, is Min HaMeitza, right? That we're going from the narrowness to the expansiveness. And one of the big reasons that, as was mentioned, that this is one of the verses that is said before the blowing of the shofar. And as we mentioned, if you think of the actual shape of the shofar, it's not just, I mean, the voice is you know, gives us that, as Stacey said, but the shape of the shofar is that idea. There's a narrow, you know, small part that you blow into, and then it comes out of the expansiveness. So the shape actually fits the pasuk as well, which is actually beautiful because it's just an imagery that we have as we see when they are blowing the shofar. But what does that mean? I mean, what's the idea? So we've already seen a lot, actually, incredible depths. And I just want to share an interesting idea about when we talk about the meitzar, as we're saying, the narrowness and then the expansiveness. So there is in life big moments. There are big times, there are big challenges that people face, real challenges, difficult challenges, and everybody on their own level, everybody in their own way. And yet also in life, thank God, for many days are just normal. Baruch Hashem, as we say, boring, you know, Baruch Hashem. And what's fascinating is that in the normal everyday life, there is also this journey of going from the Meitzar to the merchav, from the narrowness to the expansiveness. So what is the narrowness of the day-to-day life, and what is the expansiveness that we will hopefully choose to be able to experience? So we'll just take a step back and we'll see. To understand this, I just want to mention there's so many beautiful things that we do on Rosh Hashanah, especially the first night of Rosh Hashanah. Some people do the second night as well. We call it the simanim, you know, these symbols that they reflect beautifully all the hopes that we have for the coming year. Amongst those symbols is one fascinating one that I know I mentioned the other day, and some people said that they don't, but some people do it. It's written in Shulchan Aruch, where you have the head of a fish. And if you've ever seen, I mean, the children, they love it, they hate it, they whatever, you know, it's both. I don't want to see the eye. I do want to see the eye. You know, they get all, you know. Anyways, but the head of the fish is the, is, you know, is there on the table for whoever wants to be near it or further away from it. What's the idea of the head of the fish? Where do we get this from? What's the symbol? And we know, you know, when we take out, when we, you know, before each of these symbols, we have a certain Yehi Ratzon that we say, and before the head of the fish, we say we should be as the head, not as the tail. Where does it come from? So interestingly enough, it actually comes from the Chumash itself. And it was mentioned in last week's Parsha. And I want you to just bear with me for 1 second, because I couldn't help it. You know, sometimes when I look into the Chumash, it's funny, you know, we say, we look into Tehillim, we look into a Siddur, and we get inspired. But just opening up a Pasuk in Chumash, the problem is that there's so many beautiful Pasukim that come before. So just allow me to read you a few of them, just because they are so magnificent. This is always read in the month of Elul, and this is a preparation for us for the new year. And what is it? These are the beautiful, magnificent brachas that Hashem gave us in last week's parsha. And I just want to read you a few. I'll just, some in English, and then I'll read you the last two psukim in Hebrew. So Hashem says, blessed are you in your coming, and blessed shall you be in your going. Hashem shall cause your enemies who rise up against you to be struck down before you. On one road will they go out towards you, and on 7 roads shall they flee before you. Hashem will command the blessing for you in your storehouses and your every undertaking, and he will bless you in the land that Hashem your God gives you. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I'm not going to read you all. I'll just finish this pasuk, and I'm going to skip to the one that I want to get to. Then we say, Hashem will confirm you for himself as a holy people, as he swore to you. Now, I want to just read you 2 psukim, and we'll see in the second one why I have to open this. So, thank God. So this one says, Yiftach Hashem lecha es etzarei hatoiv. Hashem shall open for you his storehouse of goodness, the heavens, to provide rain for your land in its time, to bless all your handiwork. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. Now, the next pasuk, which is the end of the brachas, what does it say? Very interesting one, and it's a fascinating language. It says, "Unesoncha Hashem liraish v'loy lezanav v'hayisa rak lemaila v'loy tihye lemata ki sishma el mitzvah Hashem alikecha asher anoichim mitzavcha hayoyim lishmar v'lasos." Hashem shall place you as a head and not as a tail. You shall be only above, and you shall not be below, if you listen to the commandments of Hashem, your God, that I command you today to keep and to perform. So here we see something interesting that Hashem is saying, that we will be a head and not a tail. We will be above, we will not be below. And one of the simanim on Rosh Hashanah marks this, that we should be a head and not a tail. What does it mean to be a head and not a tail? What is this? What's it saying? What is it? So there are many different explanations. Fascinatingly, the word liraish, to be a head or to be to the head, can be an acronym, la'asais ritzain avicha shebashamayim, to do the will of your Father in heaven. So to be the head means to be connected to God. As Stacy, and as you said so beautifully, when we feel the connection, when we feel Hashem as part of our life, well, then we are definitely to a head. But just let's take it a little bit simpler, as we say. What does it mean to be a head? So the truth is, when we think about, generally speaking, sometimes people lead their lives, I mean, all of us sometimes fall into this a little bit, but we do things because of social pressure, perhaps, because other people are doing it, because we are told that it's good. So we are doing things because we are following what other people say or what other people do. At that point, we are a tail. We are just following the head. So being a head would be to take initiative, to do something because we choose to do it, because we know it's correct. That's in a general sense. And even in a more personal sense, a lot of times in life, what motivates us to do things? We don't stop and think, because what we tend to do is we tend to do things that perhaps we have done this year, last year, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, depending on how old you are. You just continue to do the same thing over and over and over. You don't stop and reflect. You don't stop and think. You actually become a tale to yourself. That's what you are. You're doing because that's what you did yesterday. You're doing it today. So to be a head and not to be a tail is, I know it sounds terrible.
She's telling me that she's a tail.
No. We're not tails. We are not tails. We are, so that's what we do. So we actually, that's why we get the beautiful gift of Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah gives us, you know, I heard something interesting. Some people say that our life is like a circle. You know, like life is this constant circle. But as a Jew, life is not a circle. It might be a spiral, but it's not a circle. Because we have a Rosh Hashanah. We have a beginning, which is the idea that we constantly, and this happens every day as well, we'll see in a minute, but definitely once a year, where we begin again. We are ahead. We think about, we reflect, why are we doing this? What can we do differently? What can we do that's better? How can we improve? So we choose to be the head and not to be the tail. How do we do that though? How can we do that constantly? So there's actually something very interesting. What we want is, I mean, there's all these like amazing people who are so inspiring and have been through so much. And everybody in their own life has their own challenges that they have faced. But nevertheless, every single day, we are given the opportunity to make these choices, even on, as we say, normal, boring days. But hopefully, normal, ordinary days that we hope for, as we say. And what we want is, we want that normal day, we should be able to choose to be the head and not the tail. And not as sometimes we say, I feel like I'm catching my tail. You know, sometimes we think that that's what our life is all about, right? Yes, that's it. That's what we feel. No, so we don't want to live that way. What will give us that strength? How will we be inspired? What? How can we do it? So I saw something very, very, I was very inspired. And I'll read you one pasuk. This one is just one. And then I want to share with you something beautiful. There was a pasuk in 2 weeks ago, Parsha, because all the parshias in the month of Elul are there to inspire us, to help lift us and to uplift us and to give us incredible, first of all, blessings, but also guidance, how to go forward in the coming year. So 2 weeks ago was Parshas Kisetze, which is also a beautiful parsha full of mitzvahs. And one of the mitzvahs, it says like this, Maitzei svasecha tishmar, you shall keep what emerges from your lips, v'asisa kasher nadarta, and you shall do as you have vowed, to God, Hashem Alekecha, to Hashem your God, Nidava Asher Dibarta Beficha, the Nidava, the donation, whatever you have spoken with your mouth, which literally just means that if somebody promises to, whether to give something like a certain amount of tzedakah, or if somebody promises to do something, make sure to fulfill your vow and to actually do what you promised. That's a simple explanation. But I saw a beautiful, beautiful talk where the Lubavitcher Rebbe was talking in 1979 to children, actually. Those are the most beautiful talks sometimes. And he was talking to children, but when he spoke to the children, he had many messages that are so deep and so beautiful that I say always, I wish I could live as a child, and halavai. And the Rebbe said there, and I'm just going to read you a few of the words. Just bear with me. I'm going to read you one paragraph. It's actually in Yiddish, but I'll translate. And it's like two paragraphs. And, you know, you touched on it so beautifully because you said the Maida Ani. So the Rebbe said like this, that every single morning when we wake up, and everybody, if you don't do it, it's the best thing in the world. But children and adults begin their day by saying Moda Ani. And we know that Moda Ani, which is the concept of the gratitude, the thankfulness, it's also Moda also means that we are giving ourselves over to Hashem. And in that verse, we say Moda Ani Lefanecha. And then we say Rabba Emunasecha, how great is your faithfulness. And the famous idea that we are talking about our faith, but also God's faith in us, because we say your faithfulness, which means that God has given us another day. He has faith that we can live that day in an inspired and in an uplifting way, where we feel inspired and we inspire those around us. He has faith in us. He knows that we can do that. And every morning, that is the first thing that we say, we verbalize when we wake up. What does that mean if we've said it when we wake up? It means not only is it a declaration, a statement, and a hope, but it's actually a form of a promise. It's like a nidava, as we said in this pasuk. And the pasuk tells us, "Maitzei svasecha tishmar." You have to guard the asisa. You have to guard what comes out of your mouth, and you have to do it. Which means that once we've said the Maidani, we have to live with that for the entire day. We have committed ourselves. And I want to show you how he says it over here. I'm just going to see. Sorry if I find the right paper. It's only a few papers, but million papers. Okay. So we say like this. So we say, Maitis Vasecha Tishmer, Bemeshach von dem ganzen Tag, throughout the entire day, Darfer Gedenken and Uphitten, we have to remember and keep, Das Vaseret Gesagt, Maida Ani Lefanecha, this what that we declared and that we said, Maida Ani, Azayas Dasol Virkin of Im, that it should affect him, as Bemeshach von dem ganzen Tag, that throughout the entire day, Zoller sich fearin wie es darf zu sein, that we should conduct ourselves the way we are meant to. As we say, to live in the merchav, in the expansiveness, in that sense of meaning and purpose, with joy and with inspiration. That's how we're really meant to live. And then he says a beautiful, beautiful paragraph. And also, we have to know, and this is also something interesting, every moment we are making a choice. And when we choose to live with that declaration, with those words, living in that inspired way, it doesn't only affect us, but it affects everybody around us, as you said. Sometimes we're strong for those around us. And sometimes that can motivate us, even if we're not in the mood. But we realize that our mood affects all the people and everybody around us. And then beautifully, just wanted to say one more paragraph, he says, "Und das, was gedenkt dem Maidani lefanecha," and this, that we remember this Maidani, "Gitem dem kayach," this itself gives him the strength, "und die simcha," and the joy, "und die hatzlocha," and the success, "as soll sich eisfirin in sein tag, teglach and lebin, vi es darf zu sein," that he should be able to lead and live his day in the best possible way, the way he should. So this is the way a person, through a normal, as we say, day, can live in that expansiveness, in that state where we leave the narrowness, we leave all of those, as we say many, many times, those voices that say you can't and you can and whatever, all the different, I don't have to tell you, everybody has their own. And instead, what do? We choose to live in an inspired way, as a head, not as a tail, living, as we say, in a beautiful way. And Hashem, and I just want to tell you that, as we were told so beautifully, but this time of the year, leading up to Rosh Hashanah, you know, whenever we meet somebody, it's an opportunity to wish. It's an opportunity to wish each other Shana Tova, Mituka, all the brachas that we feel, all the brachas that a person needs. And we shouldn't minimize from ourselves when we say it. Sometimes we think, oh, what's the point of me saying it? I'm just an ordinary person. What difference can that make? First of all, we have to realize that when we give a bracha, every single Jew, every ordinary Jew, gives a bracha to another Jew. As long as you do it with sincerity, the power is tremendous. And as well as, so when you hear it from somebody else, also realize that to be the recipient of a bracha from another Jew is such a gift. And this is the gift that we have every time we meet each other. So we wish each other a Shana Tova, Umitukah, as we say, revealed good, all the brachas that everybody needs, Of course, there should be peace. We should all be in Israel together, Mirtz Hashem, celebrating Yontif. And I say we should live inspired and just imagine if we could all be in Jerusalem, both Rosh Hashanah and imagine Yom Kippur with the Kohen Gadol, and then imagine Sukkot, where everybody will come together. It will be the most incredible simcha, the most incredible joy. And it can happen. But please, God, a healthy year, a happy year, a year full of brachas.
I think I have the hardest job out of everyone. It's very difficult to follow all of that from everybody, but I'll try. So on a Sunday morning a few weeks ago, my little brother Gilly, who some of you know, who actually isn't so little anymore, I'm littler than him these days, he drafted into the army with a very fresh buzz cut, which had just been done by his mates, a tan from the Israeli sun, and muscles that we love to tease him about. He looks so grown up, but also just like the 20-year-old kid that he is, the baby of the family that I will always see him as, funny and sensitive, even though now he's going to have to be super tough with so much ahead of him. Other kids his age are partying or studying or traveling or earning money, often a mix of all of that at once. But at the crack of dawn, Israel time, on Sunday morning when I spoke to him on the phone, he was getting ready to get into the car and drive to base for the first time. Because of the time difference and the million different things that he was doing before that, it was the only opportunity that I had to properly speak to him before he went in and wouldn't have access to his phone. Watching him prepare to draft was already something that was hard on a visceral level. After losing our cousin Zamiri at the end of 2024, who fell in Gaza while serving in a combat engineering unit. Meanwhile, we were watching while another cousin of mine was going in and out of Miluim for 3 years, putting his whole life and his wife's on hold like so many other people in Israel, worrying every time if and when he would come out, and then watching my other cousin, also just a kid, draft into the army as well. It became even more emotional and even harder to have Gilly so far away when I had to watch him cry over the phone when I told him that Be'ezrat Hashem, he was going to be an uncle. He burst into tears and said, "Okay, can you give me just maybe like 1 minute before anything else really big happens?" And after the phone call, I just kept thinking about how one day it will be so hard, almost impossible even, to send my own children down the same path. But at the same time, how I would be so incredibly proud on the deepest possible level, like I am of Gilly and all of the soldiers who give up so much to defend our people. It made me realize that the duality of being Jewish is being able to hold that very real fear while also pushing ourselves to be brave enough to move past it anyway and do what needs to be done. To cry out to Hashem with every atom of our beings to protect them, while also at the same time having faith in Hashem, even when it feels impossible, that the most important thing is for them and for all of us to be achieving our purpose in the world, even if parts of the journey cause us pain or fear or difficulty. What brings me strength and comfort in those moments, that mates are those difficult, narrow moments when I feel like it's just too painful, is recognizing that being Jewish is being bigger than ourselves and our own individual stories. We represent a nation and we are part of the broader collective of Am Yisrael. Our lives and our legacies reach beyond just us. Tefillah in Judaism, including vidui on Yom Kippur, when we are individually each called to account, is not said in the singular, which would make the most sense, but it is said in the plural. Zamiri's life was not just one singular life that was lived only for its own sake, but it was one letter, one page in a story that has been told throughout history and is always continuing to unfold. Rav Soloveitchik talks about an element of Jewish identity called the covenant of destiny, Brit Ye'ud, entered into at Har Sinai. This defines Am Yisrael not as an object of persecution, but the subject of a unique calling to become a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Under this covenant, the Jewish people are defined not by what others do to them, which is often how other people define us, but by the task that they have undertaken, the role they have chosen to play in history. The Jewish people did not choose to become slaves in Egypt or any of the persecution that we have faced since. They did, however, choose to become Hashem's people at Har Sinai when they said, Na'aseh v'nishma. Our task as a people is to bear witness to the presence of Hashem through the way we lead our lives with mitzvot and Torah and the path we chart as a people across the centuries. Recognizing that we are part of something larger than ourselves is comforting and puts the difficult moments in perspective, at least for me. But it actually also demands something even more from us. If Am Yisrael has a unique purpose in history, then that purpose can only be fulfilled and carried by millions of individual choices made by each of us every day. The mission of the Jewish people and our collective purpose is only realized when each of us asks what role Hashem wants us to play within it. Just as our national story is not defined by what happens to us, but by the purpose we choose to pursue, so too our personal lives are not measured by comfort, ease, or avoiding struggling. They are measured by whether we are becoming the people Hashem created us to be. Fulfilling our potential, achieving our purpose, should be the goal that we aim for, rather than simply trying to avoid discomfort or struggles. In many ways, this is one of the lessons of Min HaMeitzar. From the narrow place I called out to Hashem, Hashem answered me with expansiveness. The Pasuk does not say that Hashem removed the Meitzar. It says that he answered with expansiveness. It says that he answered with Merchav. When Hashem answers us, what changes is not necessarily the situation itself, but our perspective, our capacity, our ability to carry the challenge. Rav Soloveitchik says in Kol Dodi Dofek that a Jew can respond to suffering not by asking, why did this happen, which will not lead to any satisfying answers, but by asking, what does Hashem want me to do with this? It is one thing to believe in Hashem and Torah and mitzvot, to hold a view of the world in which Hashem's essence is in everything, that Hashem is responsible for every particle of existence. What is often uncomfortable for us, though, is to then follow through with that logic and connect the dots of what that implication practically means for us, which is that we have to change our behavior to align ourselves more closely with what Hashem wants, that we have to work on ourselves and keep striving to be better, which is something that is a key focus of Elul. But another practical implication of what this worldview means is that Hashem has a plan, even when it is not clear to us. Together, I have tried to remind myself of both of these things in the difficult moments, that I cannot control Hashem's overall plan, but I can control my own actions. I may not always be able to escape the Meitzar, but I can choose how I respond to it, and I can try to channel the uncertainty, fear, and pain into growth, purpose, and meaning. Drawing inspiration from the generations who lived before us and those who give so much of themselves to Am Yisrael every single day, like these boys who fight to protect not only Jewish lives, but Jewish way of life, I am reminded that a meaningful life is not one free from fear, uncertainty, or struggle. It is one lived in the pursuit of purpose, in service of something greater than ourselves. And as we enter the Yamim Noraim, may we have the courage to ask not only why we face the challenges that we do, but what Hashem is calling us to do through them. And may we all be successful in turning our moments of constriction into opportunities for growth.
Well, thank you to all our incredible speakers who taught us how they are able to find Hashem in their times of constraints. And really incredible. I'm so blown away. Like, each of you had such beautiful things to share. So thank you. I want to wish us all, as everyone has said, that we should all be blessed with a year of only merchav, of only seeing Hashem's revealed goodness in all aspects. Everything that everyone's ovens for should be answered, as I wished everyone last year. I remember, if you remember, I said the year before, Hashem answered my tefillahs double. So any tefillah that anyone asks for should only be blessed double and triple, and everything that you wish for, just with Hashem's open, revealed, and expansive hands. And we should all go to the ultimate merchav of Mashiach very, very soon. Shana Taiva, and thank you all so much for coming.